BBC World Service. Our next programme comes from Peking.
My name's King, Peking, but you can call me Peter, since that's how I usually introduce myself, or am introduced in this context.
This is London.
Which is a fat lie for a start. That's not London, it's Lily Bolero, an old Irish revolutionary marching song. At least that's the story put about by Grove's Dictionary of Music. In fact, it's an old newsreader's revolutionary marching song, and if you listen very carefully, you can hear the words.
Here is the news, the BBC News. We'd rather not read it, but cannot refuse. I'm sick of depressions and plenary sessions, of private transgressions and public confessions. Integration, devaluation, diplomats missing without explanation, stolen old masters, financial disasters. Please spare us a thought when we're reading the news.
Please spare us a thought when we're reading the news. I'll drink to that. All these years, I've brought you news of fresh disasters. I've wished there could have been time to give you the news of some of the other things that have happened. Things that might have cheered you up. Well, now at last I've got the chance, and for the next half hour I'm going to pull out a few of those stories from the files. They're all reported to have happened. Some of them you might have heard before, but put together, I hope they'll convince you that there's still something to laugh about in life. So, as they say in the newspaper business,
hold the front page! An Idiot's Guide to Some of the Deservedly Obscure News Stories of 1968. Your Idiot Guide, Peter King.
Welcome back. And obviously, even for an idiot, politics is a subject to avoid. In fact, it's a subject we'll probably have to avoid, because political news is never obscure, even when it ought to be. So anything that was going on the political front, you'll have heard already. Even perhaps some of the headlines that illustrated so clearly the rush with which stories were put together on the United States presidential election. Do you remember, for instance, what the papers screamed at us when the struggle was at its closest?
Humphrey goes to bed. Anything can happen.
Or even more romantically,
Humphrey and Nixon neck and neck.
And then, when Nixon chose his moment to be interviewed on television, what did the headlines reveal?
Nixon picks his spot.
Watch that close-up, Charlie. And there are three reasons for being grateful that you already know about the big political stories of the year. There's nothing more to be revealed, although you may not have noticed the BBC's news report about the contortions those other two chaps got up to in Gibraltar.
Ian Smith and Mr. Wilson are living in neighbouring ships, tied up so close to each other that they can lean out of each other's portholes and shake hands.
But only by bending over backwards. Faced with all these personal details about our leaders, it's refreshing to turn to less pressing matters. For a start, it's hard to think of anything less pressing than this speech, by a Viscount, no less, in the House of Lords.
My lords, I think it will relieve those of your lordships who are here to know that I have already told the noble lord, Lord Leatherland, that I am getting up only to say that I am about to sit down again in one moment. I had intended to make a short speech, which I then found would have been in the form of a footnote, that is not a deliberate pun, a postscript to Lord Foote's speech, with every word of which I may say I agreed, as I usually do, on a point with which he dealt at considerable length. I was intending to deal with it from quite a different aspect, and I hope to do so in much the same terms. But I think this is not the appropriate occasion on which to do it. Having said that, I will sit down.
And as far as can be ascertained, he did. Thank God for Hansard, without whom that prose gem would have been lost. But I suppose politicians in general are a different breed nowadays. Gordon Clyde thinks so, anyway.
24 hours a day, the world is in a plight. De Gaulle is sitting on the gold while Harold's sitting tight. Castro's keeping very quiet. Mao is down with flu. Ian Smith is dreaming of an ocean rendezvous. Singing three yawns for politics. Politicians, too. They just don't seem to sparkle like the characters we knew. How we need the words and deeds of sweet Georgie Brown. When it came to fun and games, he captured the crown. Since he's quit the headline news, politics has had the blues. Please come back and spread confusion, sweet Georgie Brown.
That being so, let's look elsewhere for the humour of those in power. Let's get down to the grassroots where things really happen. The Daily Telegraph has been taking soundings in rural England.
The West Sussex County Council has given hikers the right to walk through a pile of manure 10 feet high at Steepwood Farm, Billinghurst.
And the Telegraph solemnly assures us that no one so far has taken advantage of the Council's offer. If that proves anything, it is that hikers in West Sussex are all less than 10 feet tall, or even that they don't want to walk through a heap of manure. It's a subject on which people tend to be very sensitive. You take another civilized rural retreat in Western England, Cheltenham, where the council is inaugurating a social revolution. They have public conveniences in Cheltenham, and up to now they've been discreetly labelled ladies and gentlemen, and now suddenly they're for women and men instead. Councillor Dudley Aldridge is hopping mad.
Since women and men went up, ladies and gentlemen don't go there anymore.
Which makes you wonder why they ever went there in the first place. In Newbury, also in the west of England, it's not the labelling of the places, but the design that upsets the clients. A correspondent wrote in the Weekly News,
"If the local bodies cannot produce designs that benefit the village, might we not be allowed to make suggestive contributions?"
Yes, madam. In Steeple Bunstead in Essex, they wouldn't even ask. This is a community that believes in taking these decisions out of the hands of the bureaucrats and making up their own minds. Not long ago, there was wild talk about a second windmill being built in the village. They soon squashed that idea. Their spokesman explained,
"There isn't enough wind for the one we've already got."
Ah, but further west at Wallingford in Berkshire, there's too much power in the land. According to the Reading Post, the number of illegitimate births in Wallingford last year was the highest since 1954. The paper adds,
"The construction of Didcot Power Station may have some bearing on the phenomenon."
All power corrupts, I know, but that's ridiculous. All the same, it gave the girls of Didcot something to sing about.
"You touch my fingertips and they glow in the dark. You bend to kiss my lips and we set up a spark. Maybe I should resist your electrical thrill. Time like this, my resistance is nil. So don't think I'm mocking if I say you're shocking whenever you're holding me tight. I don't want your flattery, just charge up your battery and switch on my circuit tonight. You lie, why are you?"
Now, of course, the course of true love never did run smooth, and if it did, it hardly ever made the news. Mark you, it's a wonder it ever runs at all when you consider how ignorant we all are. The London Evening Standard showed us up with the results of a public opinion poll.
"It is perhaps of interest that some activities which women particularly enjoy doing require the cooperation of men, and men, on the whole, are less enthusiastic about doing those things."
Which, if it does nothing else, shakes your faith in opinion polls. But the experts are no better. A doctor has startled the readers of one British paper with the assertion that, in terms of desirable energy expenditure, making love is the equivalent of a brisk 5-mile walk. Readers were horrified, one especially so.
"Quite apart from the fresh air aspect, I don't think that sort of information should be made available to the public at large."
Although it lends new point to one old song, a cue for old singer Gordon Clyde.
"I'll walk beside you on a 5-mile route. They say it makes a healthy substitute. So when I crave a spot of you-know-what, I'll walk beside you, though I'd rather not."
But young lovers still get into trouble, and it's just as well that all the world, including the judiciary, loves a lover. Otherwise, Shropshire magistrates wouldn't have been so impressed by the claims put forward for one young man in trouble.
"His girlfriend knows all about the trouble he's been in, and she's prepared to bend over backwards to keep him away from drink."
Remarkably sporting. If they survive that, they may even get to the next stage, marriage. And I hope they're luckier with press coverage of the ceremony than one young couple. The Eastbourne Herald Chronicle sent along a star reporter who came up with this.
"The bride, who was given away by her father, entered the church to the music of Jeremiah Clark's trumpet, voluntarily."
The Sunday Post spotted another original bride in Edinburgh.
"Miss Marilyn Ritchie caught my eye with her fur hat and muff. Her mother made them from her own fur."
thus beginning a whole new cycle of shaggy mother stories. But, of course, it's after the wedding that the newsmen get interested. Nothing like a good marital fracas to attract the reporters. Human stories, they call them. Sooner or later, when this topic arises, you have to mention bed. So if you'd rather turn the volume down for 30 seconds, that's all it takes to report that authoress Bridget Brophy was quoted in The Sun as saying,
"If I wake up in bed with someone I don't recognize, it worries me."
Which is more than you can say for the lady who turned up in court in Barnet, Hertfordshire. She woke up to find a man in her bed, and being curious, asked him who he was. "Don," he replied. "Ah, yes," she said. And then she remembered she'd been on friendly terms with him about 3 years before. We never learned his second name, but he could be the chap referred to by Mr. Justice Leighty in the High Court.
"Mr. Robinson has admitted one act of adultery, but I am satisfied it was committed for a very long time."
He's satisfied. The Daily Telegraph quoted another divorce court judge, less easily convinced.
"One slap with a wet fish or a hot fried place in 40 years is not going to make me say that anyone should have a decree."
Well, slap him again when he's taken his wig off, then. Of course, it's a very small percentage of divorce cases that catch the attention of the news agencies. There has to be an unusual element, which is perhaps what prompted one agency to send over the teleprinters the news that an Ealing lady had been granted a decree nisi. She was, by profession, a fire-eater, and the inference was that she'd caught her husband looking up an old flame. Other athletic achievements to catch the eye took place in Mexico City, where, you may recall, it was the year of the Olympic Games. But everything in sport is so perishing serious nowadays, it's difficult to know what's funny and what's disastrous blow to national prestige. So most of the humour has been unintentional. It has come not from the participants, but from those frenzied commentators. In the gymnastic events, for instance, we learnt,
"The Russian girls are extremely good on the floor."
And in the aquatic events, we heard about a man who was highly fancied for the single sculls final. Highly fancied.
"They tell me he was stroked by a woman in Australia, which is very unusual."
And none of our business either. But if it's been an undistinguished year for Britain in major sports, at least we've held our own in some of the less well-known events. Records to go in the course of the year were for speed shaving, brick throwing, and beer gargling. And, of course, a genuine achievement in the Olympics with that gold medal for clay pigeon shooting. In no spirit of disrespect, Gordon Clyde found his muse stirring again.
"Our transatlantic cousins can throw and jump and run, while Africans and Russians win medals by the ton. But in the vast Olympic throng of colors and religions, there's none can outdo the red, white and blue at the shooting of clay pigeons."
Among people who take their exercise purely for fun, there's no lack of dedication to their game. The Daily Mirror, for instance, found an unusually persistent golfer, even by golfing standards.
"He hit 5 consecutive tee shots into a lake, and then furiously hurled his bag and clubs in after them. He went back to the clubhouse, downed 2 large whiskies, then went back to the lake. His friends thought he'd recovered when he waded in, but he merely extracted his car keys from the bag before hurling his clubs even further into the lake."
Controlled emotion, rivaled only by that now famous lady of Effingham Golf Club in Surrey, as reported in the Daily Mail. Suddenly confronted by a bowler-hatted but otherwise naked gentleman emerging from the bushes as she was putting, she paused in her stroke, looked the intruder squarely between the eyes and demanded,
"Are you a member?"
Well, of course he was, and every inch a gentleman, with a bowler hat to prove it. Bowlers of another kind were in the news in Wales. All the big cricket stories break in Wales, and last year alone Glamorgan beat the Australians, Sobers hit 6 sixes in an over, and Pontleith Vaughan were all out in a local match after amassing 1 run. Our man on the spot was a woman, Anita Morgan. She cornered the crestfallen captain.
"Well, this is an extraordinary defeat, Mr. Boyce. Are you a bad batting side usually?"
"Well, put it this way. We're a very good bowling side."
"How do you account for this defeat, then?"
"Well, we had a terrific start to the season, winning our first 4 games in the trot, and, well, we had a rise in the second division. But I'm afraid now we're trying too hard."
"You're trying too hard? You only scored 1 run."
"Well, we could be worse."
"How does the top scorer feel?"
"Well, he feels elated. He says he held the side together yesterday."
"Mrs. Rowlands, I know you're the tea lady for the team and your husband plays. What did he do when he got home?"
"Well, he burnt his boots."
If you want to get your name in the paper, and the sports pages aren't really you, crime is probably your best bet. But it's got to be the big stuff, a couple of million quid, or a kidnapping, or a hijack, or something. If you're obscure, that is. If you've got a name already, then a parking offence or a rude word is more than enough to get you into the news. You take that poor misunderstood actress, Mia Farrow, for instance. She got into trouble for using a rude word. Unless you were there at the time, you don't know what it was, because all the papers told us was that it was a four-letter word, and she defended it nobly.
What's wrong with it? It's the nicest thing you can wish anyone.
Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. Cheerio.
And if you ever need luck, you need it when you meet a policeman. Some have it, some don't. Take Fred Pike, an innocent chap, devoted to the spreading of happiness among his fellow men. His own way of going about this laudable work takes him into pubs where he plays the musical spoons. The jolliest part of his act comes where he taps members of his audience on the head with his spoons. Which is okay as long as you don't do what Fred Pike did. He's selected an off-duty policeman with no ear for music who arrested him. The magistrates were sympathetic, as, I hope, were their colleagues in Toronto, who found a 28-year-old female bank robber before them. She got the money all right, but came to grief when her getaway bicycle slipped on a slice of melon. Magistrates, of course, are traditionally equal to any occasion. Wit, wisdom, and sheer banality fall in equal measure from their worshipful lips. It is not always their fault. What about those poor, confused dispensers of justice in Berkshire who could stand it no longer? They put their problems squarely before the accused.
You look respectable, and it is a surprise to us that you are here. Others come looking as if they should have committed an offence, and we find they have not. It's not fair on the police and very confusing for us.
So do remember, if you're going to take up crime, be a sport and look the part. But it was the vigilant Daily Express that caught the saying of the year from the bench. The chairman of the Tottenham magistrates, a direct descendant of Mr. Bumble, hit on a shrewd truth.
Unfortunately, we are not always able to do the sensible thing. We have to administer the law.
The law which, as Mr. Bumble observed, is an ass. Which is unfair, because the enforcement of the law is firmly in the hands of thoroughly prudent people. The police, for instance, never rush into anything without giving it a fair trial first, as the Times reminded us.
The Special Committee of the Police Advisory Board has been examining the whole question of uniforms, and several chief constables have removed them experimentally.
Anyone who saw the incident should contact Nude Scotland Yard, where, incidentally, Anthony Smithers works as a labourer. Well, he did, until those jolly coppers who wished him good morning every day discovered he'd escaped from prison 2.5 years earlier. And our last policeman to miss this year's front page is that well-known figure, a police spokesman, in this case the head of West Mercia CID. Now, West Mercia is an area of Britain that hasn't existed since Saxon times, except in the police files. So they have a West Mercia, which covers the border between England and Wales. Well, it used to be a border, it's more of a frontier nowadays. Anyway, this spokesman chap was asked about the significance of road checks along the frontier, I mean border, and satisfied his inquiries with a monumental piece of police spokesmanship.
Indications are that an element is responsible, consisting of persons with certain views.
And if the Welsh have certain views, no less have the Irish. And a newspaper from County Louth showed exactly what good it did for one lot.
Maloney said that soon after the party came into his bar, Milligan spat at O'Flaherty and called him a stinking Ulsterman. O'Flaherty punched Milligan and Rock hit him with a bottle. Milligan kicked O'Flaherty in the groin and threw a pint of porter in Rock's face. This led to ill feeling and they began to fight.
I should think so. A good clean scrap is one thing, but wasting good beer is a hostile act. Another Irishman in difficulties, as reported in the Ulster Herald?
Robert Lyons of Castledegg was fined a total of £3.10 for having a defective tyre, no mirrors, and no lorry.
Clever of the police to spot that. Next time you wheel an old tyre down the street, make sure it's a good one or they've got you. Mark you, Mr. Lyons may seem hard done by, but not a patch on Mr. Verlin Hill of Houston, Texas. He was living there, in jail actually, with a Mr. Donald Wade for company. Time came for Mr. Hill to be released, but when the warders came to fetch him, he was having a little snooze. Mr. Wade didn't like to disturb him, told the warders he was Mr. Hill, that he hasn't been seen since. Nor so far have the two girls who appeared naked on the stage in a musical version of Peter Pan. This was at Wisconsin University, and the local police would like to trace the girls. Unfortunately, according to the district attorney.
Very few members of the audience can remember the girls' faces.
Well, it's all that makeup. One of them may have been a girl mentioned in a recent spy trial in Britain. According to one perceptive witness...
It was quite obvious that underneath her clothing she wore little or nothing.
I wonder if he knew that or just worked it out. If it was nothing, the girl should get in touch with any one of six men who were arrested in Vermont at the beginning of this month. They stole 4 tons of braziers, valued, I don't know who by, at £56,000. The men were arrested, according to an agency message, following a tip-off. It's rumoured that they were given a suspended sentence. But for the big stuff, try this story by a reporter in the India Express.
Following the Northumbrian bungalow, the Praetorian maternity ward, and the Newcastle crane, the next remarkable disappearance to be drawn to my attention is that of a bridge. In spite of the blueprints, the estimates, the bills, and the official police report that it is open to traffic, the bridge crossing a river near Ponda, Goa, has vanished. Mr. Bandakar, Chief Minister of Goa, said, "This is the first instance of its kind."
Isn't, you know. Other unsolved thefts in the year include a large wooden shed in Tooting and a two-room bungalow in Walsall. So remember, when you go out, lock up your house. And if you live near Kent University, lock up your garden as well. The students there, not content with mere fashionable protest, have been stealing all the little gnomes from people's gardens. Police were soon pestered with phone calls.
"They've taken my father, they've taken my son, and now they have taken my gnome."
And a Canterbury doctor assured the students that unless his patient's gnome was returned, he would not be responsible for her state of mind. Not even under the National Elf Service. But I understand the whole affair is now the subject of a gnome office investigation. And what's more, it's the subject of a song for Gordon Clyde.
The plastic gnomes of England in gardens down in Kent have been removed by students with nobody's consent. Each ghastly dwarf has been knocked off, each leprechaun has gone from the lawns of the Kentish homes of England. Enlightened Kentish students have books upon their shelves explaining the procedure for stealing garden elves. And the Minister of Home Affairs, on top of all his other cares, has instructed his legionnaires to investigate the missing fairy's fate. I hope he's much too late. The gnomes and elves and fairies, good riddance to the lot. Each garden everywhere is a lovesome thing, God wot. So help yourself to a china elf from a rural English plot. Get shot of the plastic gnomes of England.
Perish the thought. In a year when the court spent several expensive days deciding whether a toffee apple was fruit or confectionery, it's fitting to look at the world of industry and commerce. There's a new act called the Trade Descriptions Act, which is going to subject this nation of shopkeepers to even closer scrutiny. The clothing trade is perhaps the most vulnerable, as the Times discovered. They heard about a woman who bought a dress for 130 guineas and then found it couldn't be washed or dry cleaned. The manufacturer was unabashed.
"We don't expect our clothes to be worn more than once."
And you really do have to adopt a special way of life if you're in that bracket. Take a simple thing like a Rolls Royce. One man who bought one was naive enough to comment that the luggage compartment seemed a little small. The manufacturers were ready for that one.
"A Rolls Royce owner's luggage, sir, should precede him by rail or air."
Which is tough if you're only going as far as the golf club. But the employers also have their worries. You can tell from their advertisements.
"Semi-skilled engineering worker required in blacksmith shop. Experience in striking an advantage."
That was in an Ipswich paper. Here's one for enlightened employers from a trade journal.
"Sacking someone? Do it diplomatically, efficiently, without tension, tears or argument, by following the practical techniques detailed in C.P. Stevenson's How to Dismiss an Employee."
10 bob, that'll cost you. Post free. And at least one firm in Sheffield might find it a good investment. They had an Apprentice of the Year award, a silver shield, coupled with an assurance that the recipient had a bright future in the company. The 1968 Apprentice of the Year just had time to receive his before being declared redundant, a fate that should befall at least one employee of a clothing firm in South Germany. AFP reported,
"A man took himself to town to buy a new pair of trousers. In the train going home, he took his parcel to the lavatory, removed his trousers and threw them out of the window. He then unpacked his parcel to find that the shop assistant had given him a sweater by mistake."
A modest man, we gather he spent the rest of the day in the smallest compartment, shuttling back and forth, awaiting the cloak of darkness, which is all he had to hide his flapping shirt tails as he shinned back up his Alp. His modesty was well advised, too, since people aren't all uniformly sympathetic. A young lady from Hove in Sussex discovered this when she had her leg in plaster and found walking very difficult. Most fellow pedestrians were sorry for her. The exception was an elderly man.
She should consider herself lucky. If she'd been born a horse, she'd have been shot.
Ah, but if you must be born an animal, be a bull. It can be a great life while it lasts.
An 11-year-old British Frisian bull, father of 50,000 offspring, has had to be destroyed after all efforts to get him on his feet had failed.
From the Daily Telegraph. And we have the Leicester Mercury to thank for the story of a French bull who would have changed places with that one any day. He got fed up with his life and wrecked a motor car. Not any old car, mark you. It belonged to the head of an artificial insemination farm centre, and he did it with a song in his heart.
Bulls are not easily fooled by tricks like you have pulled. Love by remote control sorely upsets my soul. Since my life you loused up by locking all my cows up, I have lost my wits. But now I think we're quits.
Ole. Before closing, I thought it'd be wrong not to recap on the year's reports of that most regular of non-events, the end of the world. One's faith in the future is restored by pronouncements like that of the Liverpool man who was sent to demand for a television license fee.
I do not have a radio. I do not have a television. I am 89 and learning to play the harp.
If that's reassuring, this is plain worrying from the local newspaper in Corsham, Wiltshire.
Public notice. The evening of clairvoyance on the 27th has been cancelled owing to unforeseen circumstances.
Okay, so you can explain that away. But how about this from a Hertfordshire paper?
The world is definitely coming to an end on Wednesday at 12 noon precisely, and your only chance of salvation is with us. Be present at the final great prayer meeting. A full report will appear in this paper next Friday.
And from North Wales, cryptically?
Thursday will not now take place.
Which is a shame, because it makes it pretty pointless wishing you a happy new year. In case Thursday and all those 364 other days do happen, let me promise you now that some of the news will be just as daffy as this lot. We've had a foretaste already. The Guardian tells us that within a few hours, a new tax comes into force in Canberra, Australia. A levy of £5 per annum is to be placed on each and every lavatory seat in the city. Well, almost every lavatory seat. Diplomatic immunity extends to the more exalted thrones. We look forward in joyous anticipation to proffered excuses for non-payment of that one. After all, they don't call them diggers for nothing, do they? So 1969 looks like coming in where 1968 left off. I suggest we do the same. Goodbye.
Hold the Front Page was presented by Peter King with assistance from Graham Armitage, Gordon Clyde and Gene Chalice. The songs were by Gordon Clyde and the programme was compiled and produced by Alan Jones.